For YPR News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. A few years ago, the Montana State Employee Health Plan was set to operate at a loss of millions. Now, the pool of money set aside to cover health costs for state workers has been called the ATM because it so often has surplus reserves. How did the program go from in the red to firmly in the black? Dan Gornstein, host of the podcast Trade-Offs, which covers health policy across the country, shared the answer to that question. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for having me on.
So, an independent analysis of the Montana State Employee Health Plan came out at the start of this month, and it says a change back in 2016 Montana made to how it negotiates hospital prices saved the state government nearly $50 million from 2017 to 2019. The woman behind that change was Marilyn Bartlett. What was the problem she was trying to tackle?
So Marilyn was in charge of the state health plan. This is the insurance plan that the state has to provide care to its 30,000 workers. And the plan was on track to actually hit a shortfall to go into the red by $9 million in 2017 if nothing was changed. So that was the problem.
And what strategy did she find to fix that problem?
You know, Jess, she just dove into the data and she pretty quickly could see that the hospital prices the state was paying were the big culprit here. And at the time, the hospitals were the ones setting the prices and the state was going along with it. And the prices could range anywhere from 200 to 600% of what the federal government was paying hospitals to take care of seniors and Medicare. This is how Marilyn talked about that.
I was shocked by that difference, but I also then knew we had room. We definitely had room to negotiate.
So Marilyn figured, look, let's have the state set the terms and use the Medicare prices as a benchmark, and then we can pad up from there to address any concerns the hospitals may have if these rates are too low. Ultimately, Marilyn and every hospital in Montana agreed to a little more than double that Medicare rate.
Can you give me a specific example of what that negotiation tactic looks like?
There's a great anecdote from Marilyn told. She and one of her coworkers, Sheila Hogan, went up to Billings to meet with hospitals one afternoon. And they brought their binders and had their data and their stats, right? And they're all excited to sort of make the case to why the prices should be lower. And they get into the room and the hospital executives effectively ignore Sheila and Marilyn. They're just not interested in what they have to say. And ultimately, Sheila's like, whispers over to Marilyn, says, let's get out of here. And Marilyn's like, no, I want to present my data. I want to present, I've got the numbers. And Sheila says, well, they're not listening. We got to go. Let's go to the mall. Let's go shopping. And Marilyn's like, you're right. Let's go. And so they literally just walk up and leave. And I think that's really what the strategy was. It was Marilyn saying, we have the leverage. We've got 30,000 workers. You hospitals need our business more than we need you. So we are willing to walk away. And that was the strategy. And it played out that afternoon in Billings.
So it's been 4 years and her work still has an impact on healthcare prices. Can you explain what about Marilyn or the way that she approached negotiation allowed for lasting change?
There are two things here. The first is, let's talk about why the contract itself has staying power. These deals are evergreen, and so that means that the rates are still in place while the state could decide to renegotiate if it wanted. That hasn't happened at the last time we heard. And these prices that the state pays are tied to that percentage of Medicare that we were talking about. And Medicare's prices just don't fluctuate wildly the way hospital-dictated prices do. Second, what is it about Marilyn the person? She's 5'1", she's 110 pounds, and she's tough. We asked her to describe herself, and this is what she said.
I asked my grandkids if I was pushy. And none of them responded. Finally, little Vinny said, "Well, yeah, but you're pushy in a good way." So I think I'm pushy. I'm feisty and persistent. I don't give up. Probably even when I should, I just don't give up.
You spoke with other healthcare advocates from other states that were facing a similar high prices and costs for employer-bought insurance. Has anyone else been able to replicate this strategy?
It's really hard to do, Jess. Employers just don't want to anger their employees, right? You know, you make changes like this, you could potentially have people no longer being able to see the doctors they've gone to for years or the hospitals that they love and trust. So that's a real risk. It's also hard because lots of employers just don't have the same kind of leverage that the state of Montana does. You know, 30,000 employees, there are just not that many employers that are that big to be able to pull this sort of thing off. And also in other markets, you have hospital systems that really are massive and can throw their weight around. I will say on the positive side of this, in Colorado, there is a group of public employers that are negotiating contracts with hospitals that follow this same sort of Medicare benchmark model. And they have signed one contract so far, and no surprise here, Maryland is advising this group.
The reality is this is hard. This is hard work, and it became harder than I ever anticipated it would be. But the resources are there. And now it's up to the employers to just stay focused and move forward.
And I know in your podcast episode about this, you brought up this case in Indiana where people were trying to use this same strategy. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. In Indiana, employers pressured a big insurer there, Anthem in this case, to change how they negotiate rates for some services and one very high-priced hospital. But there's been no other statewide success like Montana. But Maryland does think it's possible.
So the state plan got great savings. But what might be done for all the other employers and workers in the state?
Montana lawmakers did try to pass a bill in 2019 that would have capped all hospital prices as a percent of Medicare, the same deal that the state has, different rates, but the same concept. Maryland was helping lead the charge on that one too, but ultimately the bill died.
So then what is Maryland's lasting legacy?
You know, I really think, at least in some corners of your state, she's got sort of folk hero status a little bit, right? Like, here's this woman with her big old binders that weigh more than her sometimes, and she's gone around and she went toe-to-toe with the hospitals. She actually pulled something off that almost no one has been able to do at all, and people have not forgotten it. And that plays out every day. State employee co-pays and deductibles have not gone up at all since this deal was struck. No hospitals have gone out of business. Some of the smaller rural hospitals actually saw a little bit more money because the reimbursement was higher as a result of this deal. And Maryland's still at it. She's working for the state as a consultant now, and she's trying to help the prison system save money on prescription drugs. And I guess I'd leave you with this, Jess. Dan Villa, who used to be the state budget director, told us that the pool of money the state sets aside to cover health costs for state workers, he jokingly calls it the ATM because governors dip into it so much to cover costs from something else, because this deal ultimately has saved the state a lot of money.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us today.
Thanks so much for having us on. Really appreciate it.